NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-Roll Football Show. It's Thursday, April 11th. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Mr. Denny Carter and Mr. Kyle Dvorchik and Mr. Mock Draft 2.0. Or is it 3.0 or 4.0? We've lost track. But Kyle is posting another mock draft on rotoworld.com. We're going to break it down in forensic detail. You know, we're talking forensic because there's nothing else to talk about. literally nothing else to talk about. I'm like learning guards and stuff finally.
Man, yeah, I'm actually begging the NFL to make one thing happen so we can talk about it.
Well, that's CJ Uzama erasure. Sure, I don't actually remember what team he signed with, but I know
that. Did he sign with the team?
He did. He signed with the team today. I genuinely don't know who. I forgot.
Oh, I mean, I was deep in the which guard or the Cowboys going to take sauce. I didn't see any of you could have told me, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers got cut and retired. I wouldn't have seen it, dude. I'm not.
You guys didn't know that CJ Uzama signed with the Eagles. I mean, this is honestly kind of pathetic.
I didn't. There's
that's
no
not
way
good
to
for
know.
Albert O. That's bad for Albert O.
Oh, my God.
Oh, stop with the Albert O. Oh,
I wasn't entirely accurate. There's one other thing to talk about. The Texans offense. The Texans actually did something. Why don't the other teams actually do something?
Yeah, please.
Danny's going to have one final check-in on the Texans and what we hope is going to be a new-look offense post-Stephon Diggs. So we'll get to that in the second half of the show. I mean, we usually riff. I mean, I could talk about the Masters. I could talk about Shohei Ohtani's interpreter being the single, not just the worst gambler of all time, the worst criminal of all time. And just, like, literally saying in texts, like, yep, did a crime. And the FBI, like, easily obtaining those texts. And then implicating him.
Yeah, he lacks that dog that most criminals have.
Well, he's got the betting dog. I mean, how much do you think this man? I feel bad that this guy got caught before the Masters. He needed to go out with one final bang. Like, I'm betting on Jordan Spieth. You know what? Screw it. He is still a good golfer. He's going to show, and he's four over. And
he's not even after one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, it is too bad he didn't get to bet on this year's Masters, Denny Carter.
Yeah, he could have put all his money on Austin Eckroat like I did. And
is that a real person? Stop.
Oh, it is. It is, because Denny and I were down horrific when he double bogeyed the first and came back with an eagle within like five or six holes. I don't know how quickly it happened. So we're back, Denny. We are, as last I've checked, we're so back.
Listen, it was more over than it had ever been. And now we're all the way back. So it's been good.
Who are you most desperate for to win the Masters?
Austin Eckroat.
Who is this guy? I mean, is he American? Is he over under 30?
Like, he's American. He is like your run of the mill golfer who is striking the ball really well right now.
And I've got a way, I assume, worse one. How do you feel about Thorbjørn Olesen? I ended up with a few of him.
Yeah, I know the DFS projections really like Thorbjørn. Is his name? Yeah, no, I'm a front runner. I want Scottie Scheffler to win.
Oh Jesus!
I gotta be honest.
Chalk dunk. He wants the best golfer to win.
But I am CBS executives won't agree with this. PGA executives might not agree. I am sickened that they allow the live people.
I know
in the majors, sickening. There has to be some price.
That was the one thing that golf could have held over their heads. That's the only thing, you know. They can't win the money war, obviously. But they can say you can't play in any of the meaningful tournaments. But they within minutes they were like, no, absolutely, you can play in all the good tournaments. Yeah.
I have resisted multiple live-backed buyout offers of this podcast, by the way.
Yeah, well, that was probably a mistake.
Bryson was a live guy, right? Bryson was a live guy?
Oh, yeah. He's living it up.
Well,
Bryson was live from the day one.
I thought he was one of the first, like, instant live guys. Yeah. He is for the – you guys are both, like, Simpsons freaks, right? Yes. He is the perfect – do you want to know the horrifying truth, or do you want to watch me smack this golf ball 300 yards? Because he's – I think he's in first right now.
Yes, he is.
That would be a truly horrifying outcome.
I'm actually I'm scared for the Champions Dinner next year if Bryson DeChambeau wins this year, because, you know, for those who don't know, the previous year's champion gets to host the dinner where all of the previous Masters champions come and have dinner together, and my guy is going to serve kale juice and protein shakes instead of
unseasoned boiled chicken and steamed broccoli.
Yeah, that's exactly it, because he is a health nut.
And just eyeballs. Serves nondescript eyeballs. And I don't know what these are. I guess they have a lot of protein. I said that would be a horrifying outcome. You know what else would be a horrifying outcome, guys? Jaden Daniels to the Commanders at number two. That's what Kyle has in his latest mock draft. He's overtaken Drake May, who, friend of the show, Nate Tice, sold Denny and I on Drake May on Tuesday. Nate, an amazing guest. Check out his work on the Athletic podcast and over at Yahoo. So, Kyle, is there a consensus number two right now, or does your mock speak to the fact that there's not a consensus number two? And why, as of April 11th, are you mocking Jaden Daniels to Washington instead of Drake May?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of is there a consensus what will happen? Yeah, he's been over, like, I think he got to minus 120 and minus 140 over a month ago. He's at like minus 165, minus 175, depending on what book you look right now. So, yeah, that's not an overwhelming favorite. But he's clearly the favorite to go to. I think most mocks you'll find that are trying to actually correctly predict the outcome is going to say that he goes too. Is he the consensus second best quarterback in the class? That's an entirely different question. And I don't think so. I don't think he's the second best quarterback from a real life success perspective. Like, fantasy is kind of a different story because the dude can run for 1,000 yards as a rookie. That's probably going to be Caleb Williams if he ends up doing that. And he really could do that. So I think from a fantasy perspective, I think he's the first quarterback, you know, who should come off boards, especially in redraft. Dynasty starts to align a little more with the actual NFL success type of stuff. But I think I would take, and I hope I have to listen to, I got like a few minutes into the Nate Tice show and then immediately had to start doing the mock draft. So I couldn't listen. But I hope he sold you guys well, because I personally would have May as my second quarterback if I was an NFL team. And I think he is closer to Caleb Williams than Jaden is to him.
Well, Kyle, not only did he sell us on Drake May, he unsold us on Jaden Daniels. Nate, not a Jaden Daniels.
It's a scary bet for an NFL team to make. It is. It's scary.
I didn't need to be unsold on Daniels. I was already all the way out. I remain all the way out.
So, yeah, Denny, then how do you – I mean, you would you take Drake May at number two if you were the Washington Commanders? I mean, the Commanders – talk about a franchise that has needed the number one pick. Because, like, it was the one thing they couldn't screw up. They just needed the number one pick. The Commanders haven't gotten out of their own way for quite literally the entire 21st century. Our guy last year, what's the new owner's name? Josh Harris. Frightening levels of Daniel Snyder energy, at least from like a management perspective, not from like a morality perspective.
No, of course.
But from the way he was managing the team, it seemed like almost as inept. They needed a slam dunk. They didn't get the slam dunk. They got number two. They actually have to make a decision. So you would take Drake May at number two, I believe.
I think Jaden Daniels has so many red flags, and I'm gonna try not to get super hot takey, but I can't imagine. This is a hard conversation to have because we're trying to talk about fantasy and reality football, but from a real standpoint, from an NFL draft standpoint, I think that there's too many red flags to draft Jaden Daniels anywhere near the top 10. Like I don't think that he should be drafted in that realm, maybe later in the first round or something. From a fantasy standpoint, of course he's going to smash.
I actually think it aligns more than people might give it credit.
I don't know, man.
It catches up pretty fast. And if you can't pass, the guy truly can't pass to the middle of the field.
I know, but
you're not going to be able to have success running. They're just going to like.
I mean, we saw this with Anthony Richardson last year, though. The rushing, I mean, health-wise, health is especially an issue for Jaden Daniels, the way he plays. I think if you want to make that argument,
Anthony Richardson exceeded expectations passing, though. Like Jaden Daniels didn't have to exceed expectations.
I mean, he couldn't throw short of like 10 yards, even as a rookie. Right. Anthony
struggled
Richardson.
With that.
I think Anthony Richardson actually perfectly met expectations if you knew what you were getting with him. He was a good deep ball throw in college. All of his passing numbers were pretty poor, but that's because from like short of 10 yards, he was dreadful. And in the aggregate, that makes you look like a bad passer. But even in college, he was a great deep ball passer. He avoided pressure well and moved out of the pocket, but kept his eyes downfield, hit big plays. And then dude had no freaking touch within 10 yards. That's actually exactly what he was in the NFL for the very brief time we saw him. And he was a really good fantasy option because of it. So I don't think he exceeded expectations as a passer. He just met them. And those are throwing deep is a valuable skill set in the NFL.
I think, you know, Jaden Daniels strikes me as a kind of fantasy player where, you know, we're going to see a dozen rushing attempts in a game and one of those is going to be busted off for 50 yards and a touchdown. I think that that'll be cool. And so this conversation is going to be really fraught, even, you know, when he's drafted high, when he starts the season, even if he struggles from a real standpoint, I think he could still put up a lot of fantasy points. And then, so the conversation will just be anything you want, basically.
I don't think Jaden Daniels can follow the Anthony Richardson like early career plan. For one thing,
Anthony Richardson couldn't follow the early career Anthony Richardson plan too.
But he was having the enormous fantasy success. He was paired with what I will call the Jalen Hurts guy, Shane Steichen, who knew what he was doing. Jaden Daniels, if he ends up with Washington, is going to be paired with the Kyler Murray guy, Cliff Kingsbury, like a guy who. Really, the only takeaway I ever had from Cliff Kingsbury's offense in Arizona is that he never had a plan B or a backup plan. And if like
and the Jayden plan A was bad.
And if Jaden Daniels comes out of the gates struggling as a passer, I have a really, really hard time believing the offense is going to find him layup runs or like the scrambling will just be successful. The scrambling numbers are crazy. I mean, is Jaden Daniels really like that gifted of a runner? I know it's absurd to say that over Heisman level 1,000 years, but he's not big and imposing like Anthony Richardson. He's not blindingly fast the way Lamar Jackson was. He's not like the full size speed package.
I do think he's actually. I think he's that level of speed. I
think he's as fast as Lamar Jackson.
He's in that territory.
I really don't think so.
I mean, he has also
played that fast at LSU.
He also has some of the best advanced numbers of any guy. He didn't run like quite as much as Lamar in college, but he has honestly his better advanced numbers, like efficiency wise in terms of yards after contact, missed tackles forced per attempt than almost any quarterback that we've seen in the past 5 years. He's, I think in terms of
he was a grown man. He was 24 years old. Like,
yeah, Lamar sure. Jackson that absolutely like helps.
Like he was literally like a man amongst boys.
Well, to be fair,
half a decade.
He is still, I know he weighed in heavier at the combine. I don't buy that as playing weight. But the he was a grown man stuff, he isn't physically built in the way you say a grown man. Dude, Anthony Richardson, GAM, grown A man. You know, combine weight aside, I don't really buy that as his playing weight. Jaden Daniels doesn't use that like, I'm years older than you. I can physically impose on you. I think he uses speed and agility more so than anything to beat defenders, which, I mean, it will work a lot in the NFL, but he also it lays his body on the line. I think he will be much like Anthony Richardson, like elite rusher the moment he steps onto the field. I do think it'll come in a different way, and that way is, like you said, it's probably not as much design running. There are very few quarterbacks who have such a hair trigger to scramble than Jaden Daniels coming out
which
of
is
college.
I think will hurt his rushing, to be honest. It'd be so predictable. He can't pass, and they know the first sign of pressure he's bailing the pocket. You can't be that predictable in the NFL. And he's just not physically imposing in the way Anthony Richardson is.
Not at all.
With Cliff Kingsbury, I feel like if he underachieves expectations as a passer coming out of the gate, I really don't think you're going to be able to rely on the running with Jaden Daniels, where I think the whole offense could be just a complete catastrophe. And by the way, I shouldn't have, I guess, been truthing the dual threat ability of a guy who just dual threaded his way to the Heisman Trophy. But still, I don't see him as like a Lamar or Anthony Richardson level runner. But that's probably a really bad take, Danny Carter.
Well, I mean, the difference between Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson is that Lamar is incredibly creative on the run, scrambling, both as a runner and a passer. Jaden Daniels is the opposite.
Yes.
He doesn't do anything.
Lamar protects his body, too.
Lamar really a huge difference, as you guys are both alluding to here, is Lamar Jackson did not have a college highlight reel of getting jacked. like where Jaden Daniels, as we know, the one that keeps going on is the highlight reel of him just getting of like Michael Irvin and like Mike Ditka yelling jacked up on ESPN right. in 2008.
Yeah, no, I mean, right. And Lamar does anything possible, including sacrificing yards to avoid big hits. I don't know. You know, Washington fans are going to be in shambles if they take Jaden Daniels because they've seen this movie.
They need to take Drake May.
They've seen this movie. They know how this ends. It's RG3 all over again.
24-year-old dual threat with Cliff Kingsbury. It's like, what are we even doing here, man? Like, seriously, what?
It's gonna be terrible. Also, I want to address something. The criticism of Daniels as a passer is that he rarely, if ever, threw to the middle of the field. Now, that doesn't mean that he was bad when he threw to the middle of the field. Those are two different criticisms. He was actually quite good.
Was he? I actually didn't know that.
So the Daniels truthers are saying, no, he was good in the middle of the field. That's not what it is. Nobody is saying that he wasn't good as a moth passer. Uh-huh. It's just that he never did it. And that's a problem.
Same thing. And I think that's kind of the Tua thing where if you don't do something really valuable very often, that probably says something about your ability to do it. Tua on the stat sheets is a really good deep ball thrower. It's because he takes the layups that Tyreek Hill and the offensive scheme affords him, but he's not creating these beautiful deep throws that Josh Allen does where your receiver has 6 inches of separation and you make the most out of every one of those 6 inches. He's got a good scheme and he can take the 40-yard layups. And I think that's probably some of what's going on with Jaden Daniels. He had two great receivers and a good college scheme. They gave him layups that he drilled, but he wasn't forcing throws successfully to the middle of the field.
So, Kyle, going back to Tuesday, listeners of this podcast have heard almost uninterrupted and almost without exaggeration 20 straight minutes of Jaden Daniels slander. Like, what is the positive case for Jaden Daniels other than he's an electrifying athlete? He did just win the Heisman Trophy. There are reasons he's a top five prospect. I'm just saying there's reasons he's a top five prospect. How is Jaden Daniels still, like, basically a slam dunk top 4 or 5 pick despite all the very, very obvious red flags?
Yeah, I mean, in totality, he's an elite passer. Like Denny said, he doesn't throw to the middle of the field very often at all, and that's a skill we want our quarterbacks to have. But he's a great deep thrower. He was the most efficient college quarterback last year, and he was in college for a long time. He transferred from Arizona State, but early in his career, he actually had one successful season at Arizona State where you can look at that and say, like, he had a long and winding career path, but it's not like he came out of nowhere. He, you know, in terms of the Heisman caliber of season he had, that kind of came out of nowhere, but he found limited but meaningful success early in his career. And I do think the age thing is something the NFL is less and less concerned about by the year. We saw it with someone like Joe Burrow at the age he came out at, that, yeah, it helps to be successful earlier in your career and translate that to NFL stardom right away, but it's not the death knell. So I think that is probably to some degree overblown, and the NFL seems to acknowledge that because they seem poised to take him second overall.
Love to do nothing for half a decade at Arizona State and then become.
No, he did something player. 1 year and then nothing other years. And I'm with LSU.
I absolutely love it. By the way, I have horrible news from producer Adam that Austin Eckler is back to even par at the Masters.
Austin Eckler. No.
He's back to par. You guys.
Yeah, he hit one in the water, per my sources, which is my buddy texting me saying, Eckrod's dead again.
No, and per your sources of the golf, it's not on the golf channel, but ESPN being on in the background of your office while you podcast.
Oh, no, there's no TV in here.
Kyle Dvorak, the first four picks, not to spoil your mock, are Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and, of course, Mr. J.J. McCarthy at number 4. You have it with a trade-up with the Arizona Cardinals, which this all gets very confusing. Oh, yeah, the Cardinals do have 4. I was like, how do the Cardinals have 4 in your mock? It's because
they're bad.
It's because they have 4 in their life. Is it safe to say we might not know the order, but it's almost impossible to leave the first 4 picks are not quarterbacks at this point?
It could be the first 4 of the first 5 are quarterbacks. I do think, though, we're getting, and we'll mention this later, we're getting some steam. We've had it for a while that the Giants are interested in a quarterback. I just don't think they're willing to move off of their spot at 6 to take likely the 4th best quarterback. If, you know, let's assume that's J.J. McCarthy makes it to them. Maybe he does and they take him. I don't even know if he makes it to them and they do take it, but there's some steam there. There's obvious steam that, like, the Broncos, I mean, what are they doing at quarterback? They just probably don't have the firepower necessarily to move up to 4, but it's a threat. And then the Raiders are probably more willing to move up to get a quarterback. They also have a big need at quarterback. All of this coming out makes me say that I think you know, imagine being Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the Vikings GM, and you move up to five and you don't move up to four. And then someone leaps you for your quarterback. How do you go back to ownership and say, like, yeah, we moved up to five. We'll have to take a receiver to pair with Sam Darnold. I think, assuming there is even some air of legitimacy to the smoke, you know, that is probably underlying the fire of there are a lot of teams that want the fourth quarterback. I think it's JJ McCarthy. I think they have to move up to four. Do they move up to five and then just flip with the Cardinals, basically give the Cardinals a, you know, a fourth round pick to, as insurance, essentially say, hey, we got to make sure no one jumps us. You still get Marv. That's also possible. I had that in my first mock, actually. I had the Cardinals staying there. So I think it could be at five. I think it most likely Kwesi has to move up all the way to four to ensure that he gets ultimately JJ McCarthy.
It is weird. Like, it just sort of seemed like the Cardinals. It's almost been like the Steelers and Najee Harris. I feel. I know some people are saying Malik Nabers could still be the first receiver off the board, but the Cardinals have seemed really, really committed to taking Marvin Harrison. And I could see them just not wanting to rock the boat and just like, no matter what, like it's number four, no matter, because it gets very, very complex. It gets extra complex because at number five that the team picking was literally JJ McCarthy's college coach. There's, I just feel like there's so many weird things going on.
Well, my opinion is the Vikings are moving up to five or four before the draft, no matter what, because like Kwesi is a, I believe, Princeton grad, Stanford.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Half the baseball GMs are Ivy League grads who are absolutely horrific general managers.
That's true. But he has seemed like a very analytics heavy guy. The move to pick up the 23rd overall pick in, like, I think it was March when it happened, makes absolutely no sense because they lost value. And who is sitting here in March saying, like, I don't know what's going to happen in the chaos of the draft, but I sure as hell know the 23rd pick's a good one. Like, that's a very facially obvious move that someone else has told them, we want another first round pick if you're going to move up. I don't think they just like grab that 23rd pick, then sit at, I believe, 11 overall is theirs. So they're moving up to five or four. And I still think, you know, even if they move up to five, they probably, obviously they're doing it with the Chargers. They probably end up just flipping the Cardinals for a cheap pick to ensure they get their guy. And the Cardinals in that scenario still get Marv without any risk too, because it's all quarterbacks ahead of them.
I'd be excited if McCarthy ends up in Minnesota from a fantasy standpoint. I think that just fits really well. Like, he doesn't give up big negative plays. He keeps, you know, keeps an offense on time. You know, nothing spectacular. But, I mean, I think he can run Kevin O'Connell's offense. And Kevin O'Connell is the kind of coach that just wants a guy behind center who's going to do exactly what he's told. And so they're going to replace Kirk Cousins with Kirk Cousins,
I think. I want to believe that. I still – oh, man. I think it's a little too convenient to blame – all of JJ McCarthy's like lack of explosive plays basically on Jim Harbaugh. Like, we've like so convinced ourselves, this is how Harbaugh plays. This is how he does it. This is nothing you can do about it. It doesn't matter. You can have Joe Montana, it wouldn't matter. Like, are we entirely sure that the reason, like, yeah, I know like the stats weren't amazing or whatever. I know the film like is fine, but not amazing, but it's just the nature of the offense. Like, if you're a top five quarterback, right, usually you outshine that kind of thing. I don't
know. I hear what you're saying. I think it can be as simple as saying, like, Jim Harbaugh was not interested in passing the ball. And that offense, that Michigan offense, did a lot of run, pass, right? Which is not what we like, but it is what worked because they had a dominant run game for most of that time and a dominant defense. So, yeah, I mean, they got away with it. But you know, McCarthy, per our colleague Zach Kruger, did really well, was very efficient in third and long or third and short situations where he was forced to make a play, and he often did. And it was, I think that's a sign that he could have been in another system. I think he could have been way, way more productive, to the point of us saying, should he be like a number one, number two pick?
To play back-to-back years of big-time college football and not reach 3,000 yards passing, when you're not even like a real deal dual threat, like, he ran, but man,
what do you think the most points Michigan gave up last year was? I had to look this up.
I don't know.
It was they gave up like 25 one game.
24 twice, and they started this season.
The Big Ten. I mean, just every. People act like there's one Iowa, there's 10 Iowas.
No, agreed. But, like, the reason that you don't have to ever throw the football is because in the Big Ten, scoring 9 points. That's
a lot of throws the football win. In the Big Ten. Urban Meyer sure did it. Ryan Day did it till it drove him insane, and now he's going to stop throwing the football.
But yeah, and look where that got him. We lost. We lost to Michigan
and to Mizzou.
That one doesn't count. It was our JV team. Congrats.
Dang. I'm sorry to interrupt here, but
go back.
If I can just kind of reiterate how little passing went on last year for the Wolverines. So they had a stretch here in the middle of the season against Rutgers. JJ McCarthy threw 20 passes. Against Nebraska, he threw 16. Against Minnesota, he threw 20. Against Indiana, he threw 16. So like that's wild. That's wild stuff. You know, how is anybody supposed to do anything with that sort of opportunity?
If you're that good though, you just do it. Or like they just call the offense that way. Even like AJ McCarron, like the dark day, the darkest days of the Alabama dynasty, they were throwing more than this. Like I actually agree with your point, but I do just question if we can really believe. I mean, dude, this is in 15 games. This isn't like 12 or 13 games. He was not reaching 3,000 yards. And mostly the system, but I don't know.
In your position, Pat, where like I generally kind of I get the sentiment of your point. Like, dude, if you're that good, your team would really be willing to throw more often. At the same time, I don't blame them for doing the thing that works because they lost one game out of 29, I believe, in the past 2 years.
Let's go play in a real conference then.
I know. Like, face one good offense and you'll have to throw
Michigan could never beat Alabama. That was a joke. They did beat Alabama like 4 months ago. Was the joke?
Yeah, I know. I'm stuck in the position where I kind of have to support Michigan because they beat us, and them being better makes us look better. You know, transitive property type of stuff. But like the way we say with the Chiefs, like, oh, these morons can't keep going with jabroni receivers, and then they keep getting away with it. So you know, they kind of can keep doing that. The same in part is true with McCarthy in that I don't blame the team for not throwing a lot when the same team went, I think it was 28-1 or whatever in his tenure, maybe slightly less than that.
It worked finally. It didn't work for like 5 years. The Michigan approach kept getting exposed every single year in the most important games. And then it did finally work last year. I think JJ McCarthy, I think it's being totally, the narrative is always, there's too much time before the draft. So I feel like narratives tend to do a complete 180. I think that like Jaden Daniels, including by me, is being sold is like a more like of a franchise killing type pick than JJ McCarthy. They could both be really good. I think the backbreaking potential is still much higher with JJ McCarthy than Jaden Daniels. Like, you played 29 games in Michigan over the past 2 years and didn't get to 6,000 yards passing on a team that lost like one or two games. Like, almost unfathomable to me. Like, truly.
Yeah, I get it. I'm sympathetic to this argument for sure.
He was you're talking about a 4-star recruit coming out.
He was a 5-star recruit.
I see 4 here, but okay.
Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Thanks for bolstering my argument then. 5, 8, 8-star recruit. An 8-star, and you're saying he can't be good.
I'm saying that usually the talent at some point overtakes the system.
All right. Okay. Real quick. I got to get this off my
chest. Get him, Denny. Get him.
This isn't about
No, Pat. Roast him. Do it. Roast him. No, crush him. Talk about his family. Do it.
I'm talking about his Cardinals sweater. I don't know about that. Okay, come on, man. anyway, listen, this NFL treasures guys who don't make mistakes. Like that's all.
He wasn't even given the chance to make mistakes. He could be terrible.
It's all. Well, what I'm saying is in a league where everything is checked down, everything is safe. It's just all about replacing the run game with short passing to guys who are fast. Okay, that's why I think Malik Nabers is like the perfect fit for the modern current NFL, because he'll just catch a bunch of short passes and then run to the end zone like Jamar Chase, right? So I think he fits in a way today that he maybe wouldn't have 10 years ago. So you have McCarthy, you have Bo Nix, you have Michael Penix. All these guys, I think, fit better today than they would have 10 years ago. And I think we have to adjust our mindset to that.
I don't know if we do.
This is my thought. An extraordinary athlete like Jaden Daniels maybe doesn't mean as much because of that dynamic, because defenses are so good and they adjust so quickly to these things and they snuff out everyone, including Patrick Mahomes.
Pat, I liked your rebuttal of, I don't know.
It even doesn't matter really what the current style in the NFL is. Almost without fail, if you're going in the top five as a quarterback, you had explosive college highlights and statistics. And it's this very, it would be a humongous outlier for J.J. McCarthy to suddenly be like a 4,000-yard passer in the NFL.
I mean, he was really efficient in college football. Like, I mean, like, it's another thing we talked about.
It's very easy to be efficient when you're playing Indiana and Maryland. And
I was a good defense. Buckeyes are a great defense, baby. Go Bucks.
Yeah, I passed for like 160 yards against them. Real good stuff.
Against which one?
Against Ohio State.
Go Bucks even more. Defense. Let's go.
Yeah. We'll just see about J.J. The J.J. McCarthy rehabilitation tour has been quite interesting to me. But we'll be right back after this. Get your weekday started with Bet the Edge. Join Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsick as they break down the NFL draft, NBA, and much more. New episodes drop at 6 a.m. Eastern on the NBC Sports YouTube channel, and you can find them in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. So whether you're looking to get involved in draft props or futures wagers, check out Jay and Drew for more insight. And don't forget, find all your favorite NBC Sports shows and Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I also don't think Kevin O'Connell is like a Jim Harbaugh type. Kevin O'Connell is really, I don't even really know if he's an efficiency passer kind of guy. He's just a passing kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know if J.J. McCarthy is the guy who was never allowed to pass is now here and he's the passer.
I don't like that I'm being co-opted into the J.J. McCarthy argument of this side, because like I'm generally not that pro J.J. McCarthy. Like if I am a NFL franchise, I'm not trading first round picks to move up to get him. I'm happy if he lands to me in that like Mac Jones mold of, I don't know if you can exceed your limitations, but quarterback matters. You were successful. You were efficient. I'm willing to find out when I sit at pick 11, 12, 13. Mortgage your future. Who knows about that, buddy?
I'm talking about mortgaging your future, Kyle. You have the Raiders trading up for Bo Nix at number 9. Is this something? So Bo Nix is a first rounder now, just like set and forget first rounder. When did I miss this?
I don't know about set and forget first rounder, but we've gotten a lot of steam and we see this every year. So it's difficult to say how much of it is accurate, how much of it is smoke, but we've gotten a lot of steam that we're looking much more like 5 to 6 quarterbacks going in the first round, with the other two being Nix and Penix. I personally prefer Nix a meaningful amount to Penix, and I don't have Penix as a first round pick in this mock draft. That'll be out.
Absolutely cannot wait to take 2 25-year-olds who played at 4 different schools between them.
But there's, I mean, we have a report as of, I think it was yesterday, from ESPN's Paul Gutierrez saying that both Tom Telesco, new GM of the Raiders, and Antonio Pierce, interim to now full-time head coach, have been given the blessing by Raiders owner Mark Davis to make a move, any move, those are the exact words, within reason.
That approach has always worked for Mark Davis in the past.
I know. But I mean, I do think they have a little bit more willingness and firepower to be, I don't know, aggressive, but moving around for quarterback that the Broncos don't have. And I do think Nix would be the preferred option of both of those teams over Penix.
Danny, where are you at on Bo Nix right now?
Yeah, 100 bubble screens for Davante Adams if Bo Nix goes to Vegas. That's the prognosis. I'm not down on Bo Nix. I know he's 100, but I mean,
I absolutely love quarterbacks. Michael Penix, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, where I can go back to their Sports Reference and they have seasons that were before the pandemic. Just absolutely love it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no pushback against that. I don't, there's nothing to say about that. I don't know, man. I mean, I feel like Bo Nix would be a really good fit in Denver because all Sean Payton wants to do is throw screens, and you know, Nix is the screen master. I feel like the thing I talked about before, in a check down league, there's got to be room for a check down dude, and that's Bo Nix.
The thing is, you don't come into the league as a check down guy. that really, I think, is a huge, like, you have to come into the league as someone who, like, goes beyond, like, maybe you'll get turned into that in the NFL. But if you're coming into the league and you're already being projected, like, he's just going to be a check down guy. It seems like a really great 10-year franchise plan, draft to the check down quarterback. I just think, like, it'd be a catastrophic mistake.
Work for
like
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady is not a check down guy. I hate to admit, hate to give him props on that. But he was the whole package. He was special. If you're coming in and they're already billing you as a check down guy, man, I don't know, man. Seems like
I'm not saying a guy like Bo Nix has like an amazing ceiling for pro purposes, fantasy purposes, certainly, but I just think he fits like teams are dying for viable quarterbacks right now.
And Denny, to your point, he's a guy who does really well under pressure. Unlike Penix, who does great at not taking sacks under pressure, he doesn't do a ton after not taking the sack. Yeah. He's not making these great plays. Unlike third down, he doesn't get sacked on third down, but he's not always converting the third down, which is like functionally also kind of a sack. You lose the drive anyways, which is, you know, it's good to not take sacks, but it's better to not take the sack and then do something. That's kind of the two-sided coin that makes Mahomes so special is, of course, he doesn't take sacks. He's also a baller when he's scrambling and not taking the sack. Nix was really good at both of those aspects while playing on the West Coast against non-real teams, but, you know, in his sixth college season at the age of 29. But.
So you're saying Nix... closest comp is Mahomes. That's
No. To be clear,
I think that's what
I'm not saying that. Not saying that at all.
All right.
Love to absolutely have a senior year at Oregon and then return for another senior year.
Dude, come on. I mean, like, I know it may have been the.
Oh, system. So he's studious, and you don't like that.
Yeah. Oh, is it a crime to go to school now? I thought you were pro education.
I don't know, but I would argue if you're coming into the league as a check down guy, you don't even have a floor. Like, you can't be the check down guy. You got to be more. You got to find something more to the player. Then there could be more to Bo Nix.
Penix has that. Just, I know we're jumping around here, but like, Penix is not just the check down guy. Like, he has a rifle of an arm.
Nix doesn't have a bad arm either. I don't think entirely. He has a ton of check downs, a ton of screens that really juiced his counting stats, but like, I don't blame his team for finding something that was successful sort of in the same way you talk about McCarthy. The lack of doing something, especially when you translate it to college, to NFL, the lack of doing something or the overemphasis on something is a red flag. It puts me on alert to maybe they were using him on a ton of screens because they didn't trust his arm. They didn't trust his reads, but I don't think it necessarily means he can't do that. That can just be a product of the system that he was in. Is like a different question.
And this, I think I just hit at basically what I find to be the fundamental problem with both Nix and McCarthy, where I'm just not used to franchise quarterback, first round quarterbacks coming into the league as system quarterbacks. Because when you're a legitimate blue chip quarterback prospect, the system is you in college. Like, you are the system. Like, your talent transcends, and they build the offense around you. I know the league is changing, but coming into the league as a system quarterback, that's a new one.
That's kind of why Caleb's so special is because in college, I mean, the thing is, they also didn't win as many games as McCarthy did in college, but for various reasons, the staff there was like, I don't know, Caleb, line sucks, defense sucks, you figure it out. In terms of like what he put on tape and his counting stats, he absolutely figured it out.
What do you say, Denny Carter?
I'm with you. I mean, I do get that a game manager is a tough sell as a first round pick at quarterback. But I think that there are enough coaches out there, you know, the Shanahan tree and, you know, other coaching trees, the McVay tree, that are okay with just having a game manager who is going to make the throws that need to be made against defenses that no longer allow anything deep.
You can, I think even in today's NFL, though, you can still find those guys not in the first round.
Right.
That's truly all you're looking for. You don't need to do that number.
And
you're
right, Pat. And that's why I think that people were talking about Bo Nix and Michael Penix 30 days ago. We were talking about them as a day two pick, right? And so that made sense to me. I'm not entirely sure that I'm comfortable like with taking them in the top 20 or something, but I think that you're going to have to, because of the quarterback thirst in the league, I think you're going to have to.
Some years the thirst is not there. Teams are thirsty.
Oh,
very, very thirsty. Kyle, we alluded to this earlier, but you still have Marvin Harrison Jr. as the first receiver off the board over Malik Nabers. How confident are you in that? And is Marvin Harrison, is he Najee Harris to the Steelers when it comes to the Cardinals?
No, I don't think when it comes to the Cardinals specifically, if the Cardinals remain in the top five, yes, it is absolutely like, even if we don't have sort of that general smoke of like, we know the team likes him. I think he's like the best player in this draft. We just have to care a lot about positional value. I think he's the most complete player. Like you said, I think he's a better prospect than Chase. Mari Cooper is kind of the last player who I think comps, you know, in that range to him. And I mean, that's a special tier of player. If he's there when you are picking and you don't need a quarterback, you pick him. It's just a matter of, do the Cardinals get a king's ransom, potentially like 3 first round picks or something, to move with the Vikings? And the Chargers are going to face that dilemma as well. But to me, Nabers is great. I think Nabers would have been the top receiver last year and in plenty of other years. I mean, honestly, Dunze probably would have been the top receiver last year as well. He almost certainly would have. This isn't last year. This is a great class. And Harrison, to me, is pretty much a stone cold lock to be the first receiver. Nabers is good. I think Harrison is better. And I think most teams believe Harrison is better, more specifically.
I do agree with you. I think it's mostly just betting boredom that people are kind of, or mock draft boredom that Nabers is going ahead of. By the way, Marvin Harrison Jr. is so good and has such dog levels. Why was he afraid to play against Mizzou? That's what I want to know.
But wouldn't you be?
Yeah, I would be. Good point. I would be oh so scared to have any more involvement with Mizzou than I already do, since all they do is absolutely ruin my life.
And, hey, they were good last year, weren't they?
They were good. They were good. This show has been good, but we will be right back after this. This Saturday, the Premier League continues on NBC when Bruno Fernandes and Manchester United look to keep pace in the top half of the table when they face Bournemouth. The match begins at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I'm trying to think of any final thoughts on Nabers. And so, Denny, you like Nabers?
I just think Nabers fits the modern game really well. Blazing fast guy who is good after the catch. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm too dismissive of like bigger, more traditional receivers who work on the boundary.
Who actually play wide receiver?
Yeah, like that. That feels over. That era feels over to me.
Denny, whenever Pat says like, oh, the run game's back, you and I both generally go like, I don't think this is cyclical. I actually think the NFL is moving away from it. But whenever you say the NFL is moving away from the big boundary guy, I join Pat's side and go, nah, it's cyclical, baby. MHJ, let's get it.
Yeah, no, it could be. But it's why like, I feel like T. Higgins in another era of the NFL would have been like crazy dominant, like maybe like the best player in football type guy. And now it's like, what does he do?
I do think it is sick. I think the returns have begun to diminish on like the 5'10 receivers. And like Jamar Chase is about as small as you can go. Not that he's small.
Well, he's thick. I mean, he's not tall, but he's thick. And that gets lost in the size talk as well. And size does matter with these prospects. And you say, well, this guy's tall, but you know, he's really skinny. Whether we're talking about a receiver or a quarterback, Nabers does not, I mean, unless I'm missing something, does not profile as a particularly small guy. Right.
I sort of think last year too, might've been the peak of like the small receiver, and that teams, even if they want to take that approach, like smaller yak guys who do stuff over the middle of the field, like the outside boundary threat is still like absolutely essential, if for no other reason than to occupy the attention of the safeties. And I think it's going to come kind of more into equilibrium.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
That's lost in this with Marvin Harrison's, like when we talk about, I think like Mike Williams and T. Higgins types, is that they don't need separation to win, and they're not the best separators. Marvin Harrison, he's probably not quite like the pure RAS level athlete that like Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas are, but like I'd take the over on like 9 RAS, 90th percentile. I would take the over. He generates separation at will because he's an extreme athlete. I don't think he's a 99th percentile athlete, but I do think he's a 90th percentile athlete who has extremely good routes. Like, he's not going to only go outside and win jump balls. He's also going to go outside. He's going to play outside. Was really efficient in the slot. Didn't play a lot in the slot, but he's going to go outside and get separation. He's going to be open on the outside and beat his cornerback, not at the catch point, which he can also do, but he's also going to beat them by creating separation. So I do kind of agree. Like, I don't think you should. I think it was more easy to build the entire plane out of jump balls probably in the 90s than it is now. But Marvin Harrison isn't only getting jump balls.
I mean, yeah, and not even, you don't have to even go back to the 90s. And I obviously, you could go back to like 2010, like AJ Green type, Julio Jones type guys. I don't know if they fit as well because of the way defenses have adjusted. And we talk about how the analytics revolution, whatever that might be, has changed other sports. Like, in basketball, it means everybody shoots threes or layups and nothing else, right? In baseball, I don't know. What does it mean, Pat? What does it mean?
It means launch angle. You try to hit home runs. And when you're pitching, you try to get strikeouts.
Right.
At the expense of everything else. And you throw as hard as possible, even if it means your UCL detonates.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why every pitcher is now injured, right? And so in football, I think it means you get like solid, accurate, smart quarterbacks who can deliver short and intermediate passes on time, and you get receivers who can do a lot with the ball after that, and you go from there. That's just what I've observed over the past 5 years or so.
It's true, but much more so than baseball. Defense, like, there's actually a defense that can adjust in the NFL, which I think will keep things more cyclical. The NBA, in theory, the defenses can adjust, but there's only so much you can do to adjust to 6'11" freak athletes who shoot 40% from three. So I think that's why the NBA is having a bit harder time adjusting. The NFL, though, like, it's, there's no doubt that's the most efficient, analytically sound way to play. It's also, though, the defense can actually counterpunch. The NBA, I just don't know how you counterpunch. And in baseball, you literally can't counterpunch. It's a batter versus pitcher matchup. And so you basically have to wait for the league to change the rules, which they've been doing.
Right.
So we'll see. The NFL, though, Lorge receiver does Lorge things. I mean, I just have a hard time believing that'll actually go extinct.
I think part of it too is like with Marvin Harrison, and I think this was probably true, especially with like Julio and Calvin Johnson. They are sort of that like Wemby level, like, oh, you can move as fast as almost anyone. Yeah, I think in a straight line, Nabers can probably just pure burn, and so could Brian Thomas pure burn Marvin, but like, they are just different breeds of athlete. You know, I mean, that was something that's so special about Calvin and Julio's. They were also could generate separation. And I do think that's maybe where Marvin Harrison can break the mold of the NFL being so focused on yak and just get the guy, don't make a mistake, get the guy the football and let him run. Like, he can do a lot of that too. He can be sort of the mold breaker in terms of the way the NFL is going, because he can do what the NFL likes, but what used to also make it different.
I thought Marvin Harrison was kind of lacking after the catch. Is that wrong?
He's fine after the catch. He's not like incredible after the catch, but I do think he's a better separator than some of the guys we've talked about.
Denny, has Chet Holmgren ever considered being a real center once? Maybe just be a real center. I don't know. You're 7'1".
He plays for the Thunder.
He does.
Better believe it.
Never thought about being a real center just one time instead of a shooting 5 threes a game.
When I got back into basketball, if that's what you want to call it, back in during the pandemic, I was freaked out. Absolutely.
It is freaky.
Almost like falling off my couch every time I watched, and I would see a center, a 7'2" center, bring the ball up the court.
Yeah.
And I was like, why is that guy dribbling?
And why isn't a little guy just running up behind him and easily stealing it?
Yeah. I mean, what is this?
I know.
Everybody grew up to be a point guard.
What have they done in the game we love? final draft topic we will get to, Kyle. You have Brock Bowers outside of the top 10. He was a player we talked about a lot on Tuesday with Nate Tice. How confident are you that Brock, absolutely love tight ends that don't have positions. How confident are you that he'll fall outside the top 10?
Not supremely confident, though I think the days of people mocking him to like the Chargers at five appear to be over. I think they're more likely to either, if they stay there, go receiver or tackle or trade out well back. I still think 12 or so, 12 or 13 is his absolute floor. If he falls out of the top 10 in air quotes, it's because he just barely fell out. And it's because positional value wise, like when he's drafted, he's going to be closer to being paid as one of the top players at his position than quarterback, than wide receiver, than like tackle, than the premier positions. Obviously, that's part of why they go so high, is because you get a salary cap advantage that you don't get as much of with Brock. I do think, like, look, we give him a lot of he doesn't have a position. That's awesome. You know, we give him that guff a little bit, but like he can truly win in the way a lot of NFL tight ends win. He just also has this added layer where he can be an elite, you know, pass catching, you know, slot type of receiver, a screen player. But even when you just look at his stuff, 10 plus yards downfield, he's one of the best tight end prospects of the past 10 years. He just gets to pad the number, quote, pad the numbers. This is still valuable with like somewhat gimmicky yak stuff, with yak stuff that you may not see as much of in the NFL.
So really, really good stuff from Kyle and his mock draft. Check it out. It will be live on rotoworld.com when you are listening to this podcast. And how many mocks are you going to do? One more before the draft? Two more?
I'll do at least one more, and maybe we'll do two more. We'll see.
We will see. We're going to have so much good draft content on NFL.com between the likes of Kyle, Eric Froton, Zach Kruger. Just a lot of really good stuff coming. We have some really good redraft stuff right now from Mr. Denny Carter. We've talked a lot about the Texans offense on the show. Kyle had an article right when the trade went down, but Denny got to take a bit of a little longer look at it, dive into the numbers more on the Texans offense. And so first, you think BFF Bobby is ready to go pass heavy, open this thing up, Denny? Is that what you found?
Yeah. I mean, I hinted at this on a recent show where I think that, you know, acquiring Diggs and to pair with Tank Dell and Nico Collins is enough to tell us that, like, yes, we are committed to just doing the thing, you know, like we're just going to let CJ Stroud drop back and propel us to, you know, to, I don't know, AFC South championship.
Glory, glory,
glory. Okay. I'm trying to pump the brakes a little bit, but I mean, they're a really good team, really good offense. Even without, you know, before they got Diggs, even though this is like late career, not as productive Diggs, I still think it was a good acquisition. So the Texans had one game last year that really stood out as like a moment of, like you said, glory for the CJ Stroud led offense, where they played the Bucs in week 9. It was 39-37 win against Tampa, and Bobby Slowick just let Stroud cook. Okay. They were 10% over their first down pass rate over expected, 8% over for the game overall, and really, really aggressive. They got away from the run pass thing that they had been doing early in that season. After they kind of got freaked out, they went pass heavy to start the season. I think the media reaction was like, "What are you doing? You have a rookie. You have to run the ball. You have to give it to who was their running back?"
Damian Pierce
before Damian he Pierce. Got Shadow
he's,
Realm.
He's no longer in the league, but
the NFL's worst running back. You have to give it to him. So Bobby Slowick kind of, you know, got balanced to run heavy, but against the Bucs, they let it rip, and it really worked out. 470 some yards for Stroud, 5 touchdowns. I'm not saying that that's going to be a standard, obviously. Okay. But I think it showed what can happen when Stroud is sort of, you know, is given some slack on what he can do here. Another example that jumps out at what not to do is when they played against the Panthers, and they lost somehow to the Panthers, a game I heard about a lot from Carolina fans. Bobby Slowick was 10% under his expected dropback rate. They were hyper conservative on third downs. Like, that has to go. That all has to go. I pointed out in the article that the Texans, D'Amico Ryans, was ultra conservative on fourth downs. I think that they need to re-examine that with Stroud and with that trio of receivers. But I do think that they're set up to go super pass heavy. I will say that because Stroud doesn't have any or not much, at least, rushing upside, I don't think that means that he's like, you know, that he should be like drafted among like the Josh Allens and Jalen Hurtses of the world. But I do think that, you know, he could lead the league in passing yards, something like that.
I just think that so we're all hoping, we're projecting, like, surely they have to pass more. But you make the point in the article, like, it really, it's a telltale sign, kind of like when the Bills went out and got Stephon Diggs. When you go out and get a receiver, when you specifically go out and get Stephon Diggs, it means you're ready to pass. You're ready. You understand the nature of your offense. Yes. Like, so they just didn't understand the nature. They, even in that Colts game, I think, in week 18 that they had to win, they were going, like, hyper-conservative mode. Like, dude, just – You got to live or die with CJ Stroud. Like, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And I think by the end of the season, they did embrace that idea of living or dying with Stroud. I honestly think that they were kind of taken aback by their early success and like, oh, wait, what are we doing now? We're winning. We're competing every week because we have this great quarterback that we got second overall. But I just think that there are tweaks that need to be made. And I have confidence in Ryan's and in Slowik that they will make, that they seem like sharp guys. Actually, Kyle mentioned this. I looked into it very strongly. Their use of 11 personnel, which means one running back, one tight end, and three receivers, was among the lowest in the league last year. Also, they used 21 personnel, two running backs, one tight end, and two receivers, at a very high rate, at the highest rate in the league, actually. So I think that that's something that needs to be looked at and tweaked, because you got to get all three of these guys on the field. I don't really know who comes off in two receiver sets, but hopefully,
it's the 5'8", 160.
But it should, I don't think it should be, ideally, it shouldn't be an issue, because they should be up there with like the Rams as far as 11 personnel.
They 100% should be up there with the Rams. Like a 90%, you are only playing big personnel when it's second and one, when it's first and goal, like first and goal to two. Like, you can throw those in there, maybe mix some extra like double tight end for play action stuff.
Yeah.
But when you are not trying to sell something that you're not going to do, put all three receivers out there. Don't mess around.
And I think that If you're taking what they did last year and saying, okay, they're going to do this year, I think that's a mistake in projecting this offense. I'm not sure if anybody's going to do that, but the article was just basically like, we cannot copy and paste 2023 into 2024 for Houston.
Real quick to end the show, see who was going to score more fantasy points in 2024, CJ Stroud or Patrick Mahomes? Denny, I know your answer, but what's the answer?
I mean, unless Mahomes,
so you think Mahomes finished? So
no. Unless, I mean, if Mahomes gets a receiver in the draft who can, you know, sort of help remake the offense, I think it's Mahomes. But if they don't do anything with the receivers, then I would say Stroud.
What do you think, Kyle?
That's a sickening. I was talking to Pat Corain a few weeks ago. And as much as it is like everything points to Mahomes not being the fantasy god we're used to, like the low ADOT, the great defense, the fact that it worked, so it seems like something they're willing to repeat. We also did do this two, I believe, years ago, in which Mahomes had a down season. I guess it was three now. Mahomes had a down season like 3 years ago, and we go up. League's figured it out. Mahomes, you know, they can be successful, but he's not the guy anymore. And then he had a like career year right after that. Betting against Mahomes, whether from a real life or a fantasy perspective, feels very bad. And as they were underdogs in a bunch of games last year, you know, down the stretch right there, underdogs in the Super Bowl, I believe to the Ravens as well. It just felt like, I don't know, man, pick Mahomes and you're generally right. And they're giving me a little bit of, you know, they give me a little bit of the spread, give me a little bit of juice to do it. We'll take those. Feels like that should be the answer this time around. It's like, dude, just pick Mahomes. It's easy.
It is.
But man, the fact that it worked so well last year, not scoring real or fantasy points at a clip we know they're capable of, I'm going to say Stroud. After all of that gassing up Mahomes, I think I'm going to say Stroud.
I don't think the Chiefs want to live that life again. Like, there was a necessary evil that they embraced, and they're not going to live that life.
I bet that's a compelling argument. I will say that they just trudged through and did what they had to do. But man, it really worked. It really worked
is the problem. I wish it didn't work.
It didn't. CJ Stroud or Joseph Burrow, Denny?
Stroud.
Stroud. Kyle.
Stroud.
Wow, really? I don't know about that. I mean, they both play 17 games. You're that confident CJ Stroud's going to outplay Joe Burrow?
I'm not that confident, but like, Yeah.
I think I'll still take Burrow, to be honest.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
CJ Stroud, or I don't know, final one, I guess, Lamar.
Oh, Lamar. Lamar yeah. does the running thing. Lamar.
Also, Burrow, I mean, I know you said 17 games, but let's be real. Let's be real about it. The guy's playing 9, 10 max next year.
Are we confident Jalen Hurts will, quote, bounce back enough where he's still easily taking over CJ?
The rushing is so crazy with him. Yeah.
I think he doesn't even need to bounce back. He could be like worse than last year, and I'm pretty sure he'd kind of smoke Stroud.
I think we've seen the peak of the Eagles rushing. No Jason Kelce. We got the knee bone bruise for Jalen Hurts. I think they're going to be take a different approach this year. I really do.
That would be terrible.
It would be absolutely devastating.
Truly horrible.
Truly, truly devastating. Devastating the show is over, but it's time to go.
Real quick, I have an update. Austin Eckroat has double bogeyed 18.
No, are you serious?
Never been more over.
And he is. So we got two double bogeys, an eagle.
We're
two over. We were one under. Jeez. So it was over, and then we were back, and now it's over again.
Oh man,
what do you think the cut line is going to be tomorrow?
Oh, it could be two or three over.
Man, Austin, you got some work to do Friday, man. Yeah. I wonder, he needs an early tee time. He needs to be one of those guys who's shot a 67 before I like even open the app to check.
Yeah, I'd love that to happen because I don't want to sweat Austin Eckroat.
Producer Adam says the cut line at the Masters could be as high as three over, which I believe because he says that, you know, it's supposed to be windy later today. When I was doing my research last night, I was looking at various, you know, wind tracking apps and things. And
so trees. He was just looking at trees and being like, it looks.
Here's what it said, Kyle. It said that in the morning at Augusta, it was going to be 50 mile an hour winds. And it was going to be way, way less wind in the afternoon. Now that's switched. So I'm done. You know,
nice that they play Augusta in Lake Erie, Ohio. That's really cool of them.
Augusta, Georgia was in the path of totality on Monday. Now its weather patterns have totally changed.
I didn't project that.
No one projected that. No one forecasted that. So good luck to everybody sweating the Masters. Good luck to our listeners who now have to wait four more days, but we'll be back on Tuesday. So for Kyle Dvorak, for Denny Carter, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Seriously, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.